FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome. You are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz, and today is September 20th, 2017. As we conclude September, what a month filled with hurricanes, with war drums beating, with missile tests. I mean, I was thinking of testing a missile in my backyard the other day, but I didn't want to get yelled at by Donald Trump, so I thought better of it. Hey, as always, questions, comments, email is kl@kerrylutz.com. We answer all. And with us today now to discuss the insane state of affairs is Alistair McLeod. He's head of research at goldmoney.com. Alistair, welcome back. It's been a while.
That's very much my pleasure, Kerry.
Hey, so we got interesting developments on the horizon here, don't we?
Lots, yes, as always.
As always. So start with, I guess we should start with the new oil contract coming out with China right now and the significance, the potential significance of it, what effect it could have on the dollar and the geopolitical balance in the world.
Yes, this contract has been in the planning for a long time, and originally it was going to be launched at the beginning of this year. However, it has been delayed and delayed. The latest information we have is that all the participants in this new contract have been undergoing training, testing for systems, and all the rest of it. And the thought is that the contract will be launched by the year end. We don't actually know when, and of course it may be delayed even further. The reason the contract is very important is that together with the contract in yuan for gold, we're talking futures contracts here on the international market. So this is not domestic China. This is the international market. It will enable exporters of oil to China, for example, to come to a contractual agreement in yuan. And when it comes to delivery, they know when the delivery is, so they will be able to cover their yuan for oil, their oil for against yuan in the futures market at the moment of dealing. So that's one side of it. They can then match that contract by buying a futures in yuan for gold in the gold market. Now, that means that they can effectively be paid for their oil exports to China in physical gold because they will take delivery of the gold. It's going to change the characteristics of the gold market, and it means that the bullion banks, who at the moment are very much angled at suppressing the price of gold through their manipulations on the futures market, will now be in the business of acquiring physical to ship to China to deliver against the futures contracts there. The game in the gold market is changing fundamentally, and that's a very important point to realize. And I suspect that the reason the oil contract has been delayed is that the Chinese authorities understand how serious this development is for the West. Remember, the Chinese do not want to be blamed for undermining the Western financial system. And by that, I mean principally the dollar status. They don't want the dollar. They want to do it without the dollar, but they don't want to be responsible for the crisis that causes. So the timing of the introduction of this oil contract, I think, is probably tied to the geopolitical situation as much as anything. But it seems to be getting close. And there is a feeling out there that it's going to be introduced by the year end. And if so, it will be a game changer for the gold price in dollars, and it will be also a game changer for the idea of the petrodollar, which will take a very big knock. And that, of course, is not good for the value of the dollar.
Yeah, that's for sure. And who are the main participants in this, or the main beneficiaries of this scheme, if you will?
The principal beneficiaries are countries like Iran, who at the moment are ostracized by America and in the past have been on the wrong end of America's attempts to stop Iran from participating in the international banking system. Not only have they banned any bank having a dollar relationship with Iran, but also they lent on SWIFT, which is the interbank settlement system based in Brussels. And so they were banned from using SWIFT. So as a result of that, the Russians set up their own version of SWIFT because they didn't want to fall into the same trap. So the Iranians know what the situation is. Russia is now the largest exporter in the world. It has overtaken this year, I think it was this year or last year, it overtook Saudi Arabia in that role. And of course, we've got dear old Venezuela, who I don't know how long they will survive in their appalling crisis. All the more appalling when you consider that it's the richest country in the world in terms of oil reserves. They've got more oil reserves than Saudi Arabia, and yet the people there are impoverished. There is no food. The whole situation is a socialist nightmare. That will change, obviously, as we were discussing before we came on air. Yeah. Meanwhile, you can see that there are some very significant oil exporting countries which are likely to use this facility. And it could also include Qatar, incidentally, given that Saudi Arabia has tried to get Qatar to shut down Al Jazeera and all sorts of other things, stop harboring terrorists, which I think is a good one coming from Saudi Arabia. So all in all, there are, I think, some very, very important countries likely to sign up for this.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's fascinating state of affairs here, Alistair. I mean, I don't know where it's heading, but it's really pretty interesting that we've gotten in this mess. And how does the U.S. respond to this? Is the U.S. going to look for an extended vacation for Mr. Maduro? What's going to be?
I think when it comes to Venezuela, history has shown that any dictator, if you like, who decides to use a different settlement currency for oil exports than the dollar, they seem to end up with a rather nasty end. Saddam Hussein was one. I mean, you could argue that he was taken out for other reasons, but it seems coincidental. There was him, there was Gaddafi, just to name two of the more obvious ones. I would have thought that Mr. Maduro ought to have been paying attention slightly, because I would have thought that means that his chances of survival are probably even shorter than the economic suggestion would suggest. Also, the other thing that America is doing to try and counter this is that really what they want to do is to contain the undoubted power that China, in conjunction with Russia, now has over the whole of Asia. And it's a power which is also extending economically into Europe. And so we have the problems with North Korea, which is very, very much influenced by the geopolitical situation, the relationship between America and those two superstates in Asia. And also, the U.S. Geographic Service did an extensive analysis of the resources in Afghanistan back in 2010. And I have no doubt that the Americans would like to retain control over Afghanistan rather than let that go into the hands of the Chinese. But I think that's a lost cause. They are already moving towards China. That's something that is already happening and is very much in the works.
So maybe that's why the U.S. has stayed the course in Afghanistan, even though there's no winning formula, if you will.
Well, I think that's quite likely. I mean, you can have every reason why they should be there, that they have a presence there already. They have got to make sure that presence is adequately supported. They're meant to be training the army there, the Afghan army, and so on and so forth. But it makes one wonder, really, when one of the first aggressive acts that President Trump did was drop that super bomb on the cave complex, on the Taliban. I think if America left, I think if we all left, China and Russia between them would probably get a peace agreement between the Afghan government, the Taliban, Pakistan, and also India. All those powers, if you like, and the regional powers, I think could come together and come to an agreement. But of course, America would be frozen out of it, and that's why it's not happening.
I think so, huh? So the U.S. is the barrier to peace in Afghanistan.
I think it is, yes. That seems to be the way it's going, very much so.
Interesting. Hadn't considered that before. Now that Karzai is gone from Afghanistan, you don't hear much about the Afghanistan government here in the U.S. at all, in fact. We hear nothing about them. But, hey, first, before we continue on this, Alistair, let's just hear from our sponsor, ZipRecruiter. And you find them at ZipRecruiter.com/Lutz. So look, if you're hiring, you got to know where to post your job to find the best possible candidate. And you know how hard it is to find good candidates. But as usual, the web has come to the rescue. With ZipRecruiter, you can post your job to 100 plus job sites with just a click. Then their powerful technology takes over, efficiently matching the right people to your job better than anyone else. And that's why ZipRecruiter is different. Unlike other job sites, ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. And in fact, 80% of employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site in one day or less. And the best part is you no longer have to juggle emails, calls to your office, faxed resumes, all that stuff. You simply screen each candidate, rate, and manage them all in one place with ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use dashboard. So find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by businesses of all sizes to find the most qualified candidates with near immediate results. And right now, you listening can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/Lutz. That's ZipRecruiter.com/Lutz. Again, the place to go is ZipRecruiter.com/Lutz. So, Alistair, getting back to your thoughts on Afghanistan.
Well, the level of bombs and so on and so forth has actually diminished quite a lot. There still are occasionally atrocities committed, but you're right, it has actually quietened down quite a lot. And I think that one of the major influences is that the powers that be in Afghanistan are now very much looking at their relationship with China. There is a lot of investment coming into the region from China because of all that mineral wealth. So that in a sense is a more natural bedfellow for the Afghanis than, say, the United States. And I think that America is actually on a losing wicket on that end, but it doesn't stop them trying to retain some sort of control over events on the Asian continent. I'm afraid that America isn't giving up its role, if you like, as the world's policeman, if we put it nicely, all that easily. It's fighting to remain there.
Yeah, well, fascinating, really fascinating confluence of events here. But the stalemate, I guess, could go on there for quite a while, indefinitely. As it has, right?
Well, look at Iraq. How long that has been a basket case. It's one thing to walk into a country and take control over it. It's another thing to live with the consequences. The consequences are the problem. You know, with all America's technology and military might, she can, in theory, overcome Afghanistan very, very quickly. But it's not that that is the problem. It's the guerrilla war that you constantly have to fight. That is the problem.
Yeah, I see. Well, interesting. And we'll just have to see what happens, where we're headed here, but nothing is looking real good. So, Alistair, as far as price of gold, what's your take on it here? Where's it heading here?
Well, we had a very, very good run up, really, over the last 2 months. When it ran up to, and it measured in dollars, it ran to a intraday high of about 1356. That was up from about 1210. And since then, we have been consolidating and moving down, correcting it a bit, which I think is natural. We are currently at 13, 14, something like that. And I would not be surprised to see the bullion banks, the traders there, try and shake it down and test that $1,300 level again. Now, where it goes from there, I don't know. It could quite easily go a little bit below it. I think that their motive has changed slightly, as I mentioned earlier. At the moment, what we have is a futures market which controls the bullion price. And the futures market is manipulated basically so that the bullion bank traders can make profits out of unwary hedge fund speculators. You can see this every time you find that when there's a reason to buy gold, the hedge funds get in. And it's not necessarily just a reason to buy gold, it's a reason to sell the dollar. And we've seen a certain amount of that this year. And the open interest expands because the contracts are made out of thin air by the bullion banks.
Right.
And then it gets to the point where the bad news, which is good news for gold, stops. And the good news, which is maybe no more than a pause or just hope that things have stopped going in the wrong direction, which is bad news for gold, then starts taking over. And we're then vulnerable to the market being hit by very carefully timed orders. You find that the bullion bank will drop $2 billion worth of futures contracts in the middle of the night, taking out all the mm-hmm. stops. Yeah. Once the hedge fund dealers have sort of find that they're not making money, they're sitting on losses, they've been stopped out, what do they do with the rest of the position? We're coming up to contract rollover. What do I do? Do I roll it over? Do I just sell? Do I stand and take delivery? Well, I won't stand and take delivery because I actually have to put up money for that. Mm-hmm. So, well, perhaps I better sell. And so suddenly the environment, even though nothing fundamentally has changed, but the psychological environment has changed completely. And guess what? These bullion bank traders clean up every time. Now, I think we're moving from that sort of environment where the gold price is effectively made in the futures market into a physical market, really an Asian physical market, which has got to be supplied. And so why this matters is that instead of the bullion banks using the futures market to manipulate the price, just buy, sell, buy, sell, buy, sell, I think the futures market is probably now being used. And I think this is really a story for much of the rest of this year, probably being used by the bullion banks as a means of trying to get some physical bullion in. In other words, they would probably sell the futures, try and get the futures down, and then try and find some physical in the physical markets. But supplies are really very, very tight. I mean, the reports coming in of Indian demand, I think, are very encouraging. Also, Chinese demand continues apace. There really is not a lot of newly mined gold out there. So anyone buying gold has got to really attract someone who holds above ground stocks to reduce their position. And generally, you can only do that on a rising price. So this current reaction in the gold price, I suspect, is one of the last that we're going to see before gold gets re-rated. And the reason it'll be re-rated is because of physical demand in Asia. I've already spoken about the oil exporters to China, probably taking their payment in gold through the futures markets. Now, all this adds up and adds up and adds up to demand and a loss of liquidity at current prices in the market. So I would suggest that over a period of time, it's right to expect gold prices to go higher, and it's also right to begin to see the price being determined in the physical market rather than in the futures markets.
Which is probably where it should be established anyway, because you have to deliver.
Absolutely. I mean, the whole point of a futures market, Kerry, is that it's meant to be a means of stabilizing prices. I mean, originally it was for farmers who had the seasonality of selling wheat or whatever it was into the Chicago exchange, and mm-hmm. you needed speculators to take the other side of the deal. It's now morphed from that to a means for banks to make an awful lot of money being too too big to fail, bigger than any speculation, and therefore able to manipulate the price any way they want.
And totally risk-free, right?
Yes, exactly. Well, not totally risk-free. I mean, occasionally they do get wiped out. But, you know, if you're working on the trading desk, you know, quarter after quarter, you're picking up nice bonuses. Your too big to fail bank then sort of fails once in a blue moon. But so what? You know, you've taken your bonuses, you've banked them, you're still working for it, and the government is going to bail out your bank. Brilliant. You can't do better than that.
Hey, so that's how bad behavior gets encouraged, huh?
Exactly.
And subsidized, right?
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah. And that's why we are where we are today, for that very reason, huh?
Yes.
So the dollar's been going down lately. Is that in anticipation of what we've been discussing, or is it just a short-term move?
I don't think it's in anticipation of what we've been discussing. I think there's a bigger story out there, and that is that the world has passed the recovery stage in the credit cycle and is now in the expansionary phase. And this is something that is being led by China. China is changing her economy from making cheap goods into being technologically driven, high level of services, and a thriving middle class. In other words, people now have quite a lot of wealth, and they're continuing to build on that wealth. So the characteristics of the Chinese economy have changed quite significantly. Mm-hmm. On top of that, China has plans for the rest of Asia, and these are infrastructure plans. She's also got to spend a lot of money on her own infrastructure, by the way. So the demand for raw materials by China is pretty well absorbing anything the world can provide. And on top of that, the new Silk Road is providing quick transport links into Europe. You can now put your containers on the railway, and it gets to Shanghai in roughly 15 days from, say, Amsterdam. Now, that compares with a 30-day trip in a ship. So you can see that the whole logistics of the Eurasian continent is changing hugely. The amount of money that's being saved, the amount of trade that is being increased is substantial. So China's economy is stimulating the European economy. Mm-hmm. Now, the point here is you'll have seen that the euro has been rising strongly. The point here is that the ECB's monetary policy is way behind the curve. It is still in place for, if you like, the Italy's, the Spain's, the Portugal's, and the Greece's of this world. Inflation in Germany, which is a low inflation place because people tend to save, is now up to 1.8%. Throughout the Eurozone, it's about 1.5% on average. So you can see that with bank deposit rate at the ECB earning minus 0.4%, zero interest rates on everything else, plus an asset purchase program of 60 billion euros a month, keeping bond prices ridiculously high. I'm afraid the ECB is completely wrong-footed. That must change very soon. And the sooner it changes, the less painful that change will be. And I think that's going to happen in the coming months. So what we're likely to see is rising interest rates, probably led by Europe. But having said that, this isn't clear-cut, because the rise in the euro, which has been 15% against the dollar this year so far, is not liked at all by exporting industry. It's not liked by the governments. So the idea that now the ECB raises interest rates, that's going to make the euro situation potentially even worse. So you can see that there's a bit of a tussle here in terms of what should we do. But the one thing I feel very strongly about is that the ECB should and will try to change, if you like, the overall policy stance, possibly by the end of this year, to reflect something which is sort of slightly tighter. I mean, here now it's so loose, it's just ridiculous. As I say, minus 0.4% interest rates on bank deposit at the ECB, and 60 billion quantitative easing every month. That's got to go. Interest rates have got to become positive. And I think that could be actually quite a shock to the system. So we've got to expect other measures, if you like, to ensure that this Chinese-driven recovery in Europe doesn't actually undermine the banking system, because the banks all own, zero yielding. I mean, if you look at the German 2-year short-term bond, which is known as the Schatz bond, the 2-year Schatz yields minus 0.68% today. Now, I mean, in an expanding economy, this is completely ridiculous. Well, in any economy, it's completely ridiculous. But in an expanding economy, it's even more ridiculous. So that gives you an idea of the sort of change that we're likely to see on the monetary front in the coming months. And I think this is a desperately important point. As far as America is concerned, the reason the dollar is going down is that I think that the U.S. economy is expanding. We've come back up towards full employment. You've got inflation running up sort of pretty close to the target or slightly more. And we know that those figures are pretty corrupted. But anyway, we'll pass over that one. The U.S. economy, however, is not getting the benefit of what China is doing. America has cut herself off from this. Even America's neighbors are getting some benefit. I mean, look at Canada, Mexico, various countries in South America as well. Then you've got the whole of sub-Saharan Africa. I mean, if you go to Zambia, which is the old copper belt, the Chinese are there all over the place. And if you ring someone in Lusaka, which is the capital of Zambia, and all the lines are busy because you've got a bit of an infrastructure, telecoms infrastructure problem in Africa, you get a message, all the lines are busy in English and not in Chinyanja, the local language, but in Chinese. I mean, this is incredible. I think it's very hard for those who haven't seen this to understand just how important this Chinese influence is. Now, America has cut herself off from it, geostrategically, and also by threatening to bring in trade barriers, trade tariffs, whatever, and calling Chinese trade unfair. The effect of that is that America is lagging and the dollar is coming under pressure in the foreign exchange markets. So I see that pressure continuing. And I see that pressure continuing not just because of what America is doing, but the sudden realization in the ECB that they've got completely the wrong monetary policy for what's going on at the moment. And they've got their task in the coming months is to work out how to switch it round with as little collateral damage as possible. So it's going to be very, very interesting. Coming back to gold very briefly, I don't think this would be very good for the price of gold. I don't think it's ruinous, but in the short term, it might just put the gold story on hold. But again, you've got this thing in China. I mean, if the Chinese oil contract comes through, then I don't care what price gold is. I know that the oil producers who have been banned from using dollars or discouraged from using dollars are going to use it to buy physical gold.
Mm-hmm. Well, interesting scenario you've laid out here, Alistair. Let's see what happens. Hey, where's the best place to find your work these days?
Well, it's goldmoney.com, and there is a research tab at the top of the homepage. And if you click on that, you'll get a submenu. And I write an insight article every Thursday, so there's one due to be published tomorrow. And if you want to receive it regularly, then I suggest you open an account.
All right, fair enough. And got any questions for Alistair or myself, just send us an email, kl@carrylutz.com. The Facebook page is Financial Survival Network, and the Twitter feed's @CarrieLutz. Alistair, great talking with you, and we'll talk with you again real soon.
That's my pleasure, Kerry.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get 3 free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.